Joan Knows. Conversations with Joan Lewis.
Joan, welcome back for another week.
Well, here we are, and it's been a busy week for the Holy Father and his usual Wednesday audience, which is covered quite amply, and we usually don't talk about that on this show, but we've had a couple of interesting ad limines in the past week. One is, of course, the bishops of Ireland have come in different groups for their ad limina visit, and then we had the Greek Episcopal Conference, and the content of the Holy Father's talks to them based on the particular situations in their country is very interesting. And with the Irish bishops, it was the Holy Father dedicated a good part of his talk to them to what he called the heart-rending cases of sexual abuse of minors. And he said these are, of course, all the more tragic when the abuser is a cleric. And the cases, apparently, they've just kind of come to the surface in the last couple years, maybe 2 or 3 years, but apparently have taken place, these cases of abuse, over a 40-year period. And the Holy Father was really, really devastated by this, as some of the bishops and their aides were saying afterwards to in media accounts, how personally devastated he was by these reports. And that's easy to understand. And so, of course, the Holy Father said at this point, what you have to do, we have wounds where the deep wounds caused by such acts. And he said it's urgent to rebuild confidence and trust where both of these have been damaged. But he did make a very big point of saying that the fine work and selfless dedication of the great majority of priests and religious in Ireland should not be obscured by the transgressions of some of their brethren, and that is something too often forgotten by the media, who only highlight always the bad news, the case of abuse, and not the good work of 40 or 140 wonderful priests.
Yes, but I think it's also worth mentioning that a certain number of the allegations are completely false, and they are just made for the money.
Yes, they are, because people are kind of jumping on that bandwagon, and if they accuse somebody in the first place that they know is deceased, if it happened 30 or 40 years ago, they're now an adult, and they know that this person is deceased, that person can't defend themselves. But then there are others who are not deceased, and it's a question of
yes, but
proof.
Also, I was talking to somebody who was responsible for dealing with the allegations that are made against his own religious congregation, and he said the lawyers are saying that somebody should go for an allegation of sexual abuse because that carries the highest financial
rewards. Yeah.
And if that gets thrown out, well, they've got physical abuse, but it's still lesser money. And if that gets thrown out, they've still got verbal abuse and there's still the possibility of money. So some of the allegations are completely false and they are for money.
Well, you can understand why the Holy Father's heartbroken. I mean, I get heartbroken just hearing something like this myself. And that's the society we live in today, where the bottom line, I mean, is always money and how you get it. In this case, because of a lawsuit and perhaps not legitimate, it's very, very sad. So you have to pray for people who truly are victims, and then people who, for whatever reason, are inventing this and perhaps harming, not perhaps, but certainly harming a wonderful priest in the meantime. But in any event, another interesting factor that the Pope talked about to the Irish bishops was, he said, even if it's necessary to speak out loud against the evils that threaten us, we must correct the idea that Catholicism is a mere list of prohibitions. This is not the first time that Benedict has said something similar. You know, people just seem to think it's negatives and it's thou shalt nots and it's just the Ten Commandments. And he said, we really have to work hard, and he urged the priests to do this and the bishops. He said, we have to work hard to convince people of the joy that comes from religion, from knowing that Christ is at the center of your life, that he loves you, and living according to his commandments, some of which, of course, say, thou shalt not. However, that is what really does make you free in living those commandments. And then I thought it was, he said, if Christian commitment is considered unfashionable in some circles, he's indicated that there is a real spiritual hunger and generous desire to serve others among the young people of Ireland. Then we move ahead to this week when the Holy Father, at the early part of the week, met the Greek Episcopal Conference. And it was very interesting. He was talking about the many problems that they face because of, among other things, the abundant influx, he called it, of Catholics from neighboring countries, which place great demands on the nation's clergy and religious, and for new requirements, if you will, of ministerial service that are not always easy to meet. And he kind of underlined the fact that Greece has a wide diversity of languages and rites. Now, he noted this, but said, respect for specific identities must always be borne in mind, but without sacrificing the life and plans, he said, of the churches that Christ entrusted to you. And then he highlighted two other specific aspects of the church in Greece, one of which, of course, is the fact that most Greeks belong to the Greek Orthodox Church, and the Pope urged the bishops and the faithful to increase their prayers so that one day the Greek Orthodox Church will be united with the Catholic Church. And then he just kind of segued into a problem that comes from the existence of those two churches, the fact that the Greek government only recognizes the Greek Orthodox Church. And this obviously creates tensions in communities and neighborhoods where both Greek Catholic and the Roman Catholic exist. And interestingly enough, the state of Greece regards Catholicism, the Catholic Church, as a private institution. So there's an awful lot of legal rights that they do not have that they are fighting for. And actually, I was studying up on this the other day. I didn't write this down in my notes, but I believe that even the Jews have a recognition by the state similar to or identical to the Greek Orthodox, but the Catholic Church does not have that. So the meeting with the Greek Episcopal Conference was very, very interesting. Now, another headliner news, of course, this week was the naming, the appointment in the Roman Curia of Brazilian Cardinal Claudio Umes as the prefect for the Congregation of the Clergy. This had been rumored in the press for about a week or maybe longer before his nomination. But it's a very interesting nomination. We actually have one Latin American, a Brazilian, South American, replacing another, because Cardinal Dario Castrion Hoyos, who's 77, are retiring for that reason, for reasons of age. He's from Colombia. So we do have a Latin American remaining in this position. And it's very interesting. I say Latin American. I know that in the United States, we are taught in school that there are seven continents. I run this by
people. Really?
Oh, yes. Exactly. See, I run this by people all the time. And I'll ask an American, now, how many continents did you learn there are in school? And the answer is always seven. And I'll tell you what they are. It's North America, South America, Europe, Asia, Africa, Oceania, and Antarctica is also a continent. So that's seven. And I know that there's been a concerted effort in the church, of course. John Paul, when he called the synod for, it was the Americas, or sometimes simply called America. And so you have North America, South America, and Latin America, all as geographical areas lumped together as one. And there are amazing differences, obviously, between a North America and a South America. So I mentioned this the other day on my website, and that for Europe, certainly for the Vatican, America refers to North and Central or South or Latin America.
Well, yes, because certainly in England, we learned there are five continents. We certainly didn't learn seven.
Yeah, well, that's it. All of Europe has always learned five. When I came here one day and began working for the Vatican, and I was reading some document, and I said, oh, my goodness, they made a terrible mistake. They only mentioned five continents. And that's when I learned that's what they were taught.
An interesting cultural difference.
It is really. And so in any event, this cardinal, as I will say in a very American way, is from Latin America. And it's very interesting because Cardinal Emes, he's 72, he's a Franciscan. He was actually one of the cardinals mentioned in 2005, kind of as a front runner papabile in the election, in the conclave that elected, of course, Pope Benedict. He's the oldest of 15 children, amazingly enough. Very, very large family. He was born of German immigrant family. So German actually is one of his languages, which can't harm his relations with the Holy Father, ties to the homeland of Germany, and then obviously speaking the language. And so I think he speaks four or five languages. Obviously Portuguese, and then Spanish, and I think French and German, and I've forgotten what the fifth one is.
Italian
is what I meant to say instead of French, of course. And I'm not sure if he does speak English or not. But what's interesting about looking at this appointment, if you look at the people that the Pope has named to high places, Cardinal Bertone, Secretary of State, so for Ivan Diaz, even very, very pastoral men. So that's a very...
Well, it's necessary because the church might have a head, but it's also got a heart. The pastoral role is an essential manifestation of the church's heart.
And then, interestingly enough, with Cardinal Emes, he was the Bishop of Santo André for 21 years, and that's where we began to see his work with... for social justice, and he defended workers, he supported unions, and actually he even participated in strikes as the bishop responsible for the pastoral ministry for workers in Brazil. He apparently had some role in inspiring, if you will, the movement towards democracy in Brazil in the 1980s. And, you know, he once said in an interview, in the last years of the military regime, when the first democratic movements began, the workers of Santo André had memorable strikes, and the church declared her solidarity with the just demands of the workers and all those whose basic rights were being trampled on. In other words, how could you not do this? And at another time, kind of following really along the same thoughts, he had a meeting in the Vatican, I think it was in 2005, he told this gathering that solidarity with the poor is indispensable for world peace. And then he asked a question, which a lot of people have asked since then, does not terrorism today have as one of its ingredients a revolt against imposed poverty? That really gives you pause for thought. So it'd be very interesting to watch his work. And
right. Thank you, Joan.
Well, we will be back next week at this time.
You've been listening to Joan Lewis. To find out more about Joan or to ask her a question, please visit our website at vaticanradio.org.